Hi, listeners. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Brown Thomas podcast. My name is Kyle Spinn. I am a South African born, but Dublin living visual artist and photographer. I've worked with Brown Thomas over the years. And today for Pride Month, we will be chatting to Kieron Gaffney of Shanakiha, which if you don't know already, is this incredible storytelling night, which is now global. You will see it popping up all over the world. And we are going to be talking about what it means to be queer, the queer community, sharing stories, and the importance of sharing your story as a queer person. So have a listen and hope you enjoy the chat. Thank you so much. How are you? How are you doing today?
I'm great, thanks. Yeah, no, I'm delighted to be on this podcast and good to see you again, Kyle.
Yeah, great to see you too. So why don't you introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about what Shanakiha is for those that haven't heard of it before.
Sure thing. I'm Kieron Gaffney, as you beautifully introduced me, and I'm the founder of Shanakiha. So Shanakiha, for those of you guys who aren't familiar with it, it's spelled quite differently to how it's pronounced. A lot of people think it's called Sean's Choice, and we're kind of all over Instagram these days posting away. And what we are is essentially a storytelling collective that kind of is grounded in the night. We run storytelling nights across different cities such as Dublin, London, Amsterdam, Sydney, Melbourne, Belfast, Limerick, and further afield. And what we essentially do is we gather around 150 to 200 people into a room, and then 12 or 13 people will have already kind of signed up to volunteer to tell a story. And each night has a different theme where the stories revolve around that theme. So you will have around 10 to 12 speakers telling 10 to 12 minute long stories, or you know, could be poetry pieces as well. And the stories really can be anything from personal anecdotes to pieces of fiction, to monologues, to poetry pieces, to everything and anything as long as it constitutes a story. And we've been running for around 17 months now. And it's been really exciting kind of seeing it grow. It started off just as a night for friends to come together, to listen to people get up and tell stories, kind of bringing back to life that old tradition of Irish storytelling in a more contemporary way. And as it's kind of grown legs, we've started doing workshops in corporate spaces where we get employees to kind of work in their own stories that then they will then recount to their colleagues at a big storytelling event, which is a really nice way of kind of getting employees to get to know each other better, and bond with one another, and just understand each other's lives a little bit more at a more human level. And then we also have done pop-ups at music festivals. So we were just at Body and Soul this weekend, and we'll be going to plenty of other music festivals throughout the summer. So it's just kind of been a total journey and a roller coaster and a bit of a whirlwind, I will admit, but I love it. It's the best thing I've ever done.
I think it's incredible. And it's just been, it's been so good, as you say, witnessing your growth over the last couple of months, and how the small idea has just completely blown up. And I think it's such an original concept, and I think people crave something like this. So it's very much needed, the sort of human aspect of storytelling. And because we're doing this for Pride, I would love to hear how you think storytelling and maybe sharing your story, how important that is for Pride.
Yeah, well, I think that like Pride is such a celebration of queer stories. You know, historically, Pride has been a protest. It's been kind of a moment of not only reflection, but also, you know, I think kind of reinstating our presence and our position of discourse in society. And the best way, I think, to get like the things that we fight for across at a human level is through our individual stories. And Pride is so layered and so multifaceted, and the LGBT plus community is just so, there's so many people within that community who have different perspectives, who've had different experiences, who've lived different lives, and who've had been on different journeys and will continue to meander on their individual journeys, that getting that understanding across at a very human level is so important in order for Pride to feel legitimate, and in order for people within the queer community to feel like they belong. So on Thursday, for example, we're doing an event for Pride. The theme is community and Pride. Originally, we were going to do two different nights where we went one night focused on community and another night focused on Pride. But to be honest, I think that they're intricately linked. Mm. So I actually decided just to amalgamate both nights. And we have around 13 speakers, and so many different members of the LGBT community from different kind of facets of the community are going to be getting up sharing their stories, which I think is just such an important, meaningful celebration of Pride. And, you know, we have kind of learned how to celebrate Pride through history and through learning from, you know, our elders and those who've fought for the rights that we kind of take for granted. And I think it's important to kind of just highlight what got us to where we are today and what we still need to do in order to get where we should be. And, you know, as I can kind of repeat myself, like, storytelling is kind of what allows us to do that, because at the end of the day, like, storytelling is at the crux of everything.
Absolutely.
You know, it's the crux of culture.
Absolutely. And just being able to share your story openly, as a queer person, I feel like we all have those stories. And not a lot of people, there's still so many people that are either living in a space that doesn't allow for you to be yourself because of, you know, laws, or, you know, maybe you just aren't, you don't feel comfortable within your own community to be yourself. So I think any kind of moment that allows for you, for someone to be their themselves and speak their truth, is so important. And I would love to know, do you find a lot of queer narratives or subject matters around identity?
So it's so varied depending on the night and depending on the speaker as well, because Shanakia, you know, it's not an exclusively queer event. It's obviously a queer friendly and queer adjacent event. A lot of our speakers are not queer, but those who are queer, who get up and tell stories, some of their stories will revolve around the queer experience and the queer narrative and identity. But then other stories have completely nothing to do with that, and are just, you know, everyday lives and stories that just don't pertain to you know, of sexual course. Identity and gender identity. I think that's what's really lovely about it as well, because it kind of just humanizes the experience. And you could have something that's very anthropological and something that's very almost political and, you know, important from a social perspective, that's kind of echoed through that individual story. And then you'll have someone else who's telling a story about a block of butter, let's just say, for argument's sake, and the importance of that block of butter in their life, and they happen to be queer, but it's something that you can relate to even if you're not queer. And I think what is, you know, when it comes to identity, like, I'm even just thinking of an example in Sydney. There was a really, 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 really beautiful, poignant story about someone coming out. And I remember a friend of mine who attended the night with his sibling said that, you know, she was so overwhelmed with emotion. She was straight, she was an ally. But she just kind of, after hearing this person talk about their own coming out story, kind of turned to her brother and said, you know, I cannot believe what you've lived through. I cannot believe how difficult it actually has been for you. And I don't think that's ever been brought to the surface until I listened to someone else tell their story. So that happens a lot. This like trifecta of empathy that, you know, you could come to an event with a friend or a partner or someone who might not necessarily fully understand what you've been through yourself. And then through listening to someone else's story, it's almost like seeing a version of yourself in a mirror. And you can portray that to someone else. So there's this really gorgeous, resounding empathy that definitely kind of comes from identifying with others, but also identifying with people who are similar to people that you know. And there's just a really gorgeous, triangle of...
Trifecta of empathy. I love that. Yeah. I'm going to steal that. That's really good. Well, you kind of answered my next question, which was, and it's probably quite difficult, but do you have any specific stories that you've heard at one of your nights that's worth sharing, that's about community, friendship, or love, or something like that? I don't know. Can you share other people's story? Probably.
I can't really share too much detail, but I mean, there's definitely been some stories just about kind of unconditional love that have really stuck with me. And some stories that actually are a little bit more about, you know, kind of the development of love, whether that's a story of someone who came out to a parent that they weren't comfortable with in the originality of the story being told, or, you know, that kind of like love and understanding growing, and those stories can really hit home. And there have been, you know, really certain stories that are absolutely hilarious and whimsical and kind of sound nonsensical until you realize that there's actually a really important, gorgeous message within the kind of core of that story as well. There have been some, like most of the stories I tell do revolve around my queer experience as well. And there was one actually really lovely kind of moment where I was able to tell a story about how my brother knew I was gay much earlier than anyone else in the family. And he kind of covered for me. Aww. When I almost got caught.
Wow.
Caught as if it's a crime. But you know, like where, and I never really got to thank him because, you know, Irish men, you know yourself, we're not very good at talking to one another about emotions, and or men in general. And then, you know, it was really nice because in front of a crowd of 150 strangers, I was able to kind of explain to him my brother is one of the biggest allies I've ever met without ever telling him himself. And it was a really emotional moment and it was really lovely. And I think that, you know, those types of situations have happened quite a lot where someone might actually dedicate a story to someone that they love that's in the room, and that person doesn't necessarily know that the story is going to be about them. And that can be really gorgeous.
That's incredible. I would suspect that everybody's coming out story is different. Everyone's got a different perspective of coming out. And I think a lot of people, like you said, you know, with connecting when you're actually there at the event and connecting with somebody's story, I think a lot of people that maybe are a bit sort of disconnected from the community wouldn't be able to relate to what coming out is actually like, and how growing up knowing something's different about you but not quite knowing what that is, and other people being able to identify it. I've actually spoken about this before, where because you know, I'm quite a flamboyant person, you know, I talk with my hands a lot. I've never really held back on like trying to act straight or, you know, pass or whatever. So before I even came out, people were able to identify, my classmates were able to identify that there was something different about me, and before I even knew what that was. And just that sort of that deep-rooted fear of rejection with your sexuality is really intense.
Yeah. And it's quite formative as well.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of influences a lot of the stories of your childhood.
Absolutely.
Stories of your adolescence. And like even a theme that I'm planning on doing within the next couple of months is childhood.
Okay.
Because I think that that's such a relevant theme to so many lives.
Yeah.
It's so formative as well. And you'll definitely get a lot of queer narratives, I think, within that theme about that journey, about that trajectory.
So tell me, you are now this global icon, traveling the world, going all over the place. How do you think Ireland compares to other nations in welcoming diversity and being inclusive?
I think that we have a lot to answer for as a country. You know, a country that has been very homogenous for years, a country that kind of has probably been a little bit sequestered away from the real world in a way, but I also think that we are very ready to answer for that kind of cultural
homogeneity. We're close.
That is
existing. We're close.
Yeah, and I think that we're also just a lot more open to diversity and inclusion than we're kind of stereotypically known to be, and that is kind of echoing the, you know, obviously kind of history of mass migration from Ireland to other countries. And even, you know, for example, in Australia 2 weeks ago, we hosted a Shanachie in Sydney, which had quite a large Irish community attending it.
Wow.
But then there were lots of other people from other parts of the world, including an Aboriginal writer who opened the night with her poetry.
Gorgeous.
And she was able to kind of tie the similarities between Irish culture and what she referred to as mob culture, which is what they call First Nations culture, and like tie the links between them and the similarities in terms of our own history of storytelling and their history of storytelling and family, all these things. And I just could see the whole entire room of Irish people respond so positively to this link. And I do think that, you know, we are very aware of, you know, our similarities culturally to other cultures. And I think it's something that we're open to as a country. And I think, you know, like the storytelling nights that I've run across the world, obviously with impossible name to pronounce, that is Gaelic, Shanachia, you'd first attract quite a lot of Irish people to the first event, let's say in Amsterdam or in London or in Sydney or Melbourne. But gradually, the group becomes less Irish because a lot of Irish people will bring their friends from those local communities. And the way I see Shanachia operating is it kind of connects the Irish diaspora to the local community through storytelling, because storytelling is something that all human beings have in common. Like, that's why it's a superpower within human beings, because we all have it. And I think that if there is any cultural divide or prejudice, and you even see this when it comes to like kind of people from different political backgrounds coming to the same event, that cultural divide and prejudice really is eroded through storytelling, because storytelling is just so innately human.
It's the link. It's the link that brings us together.
Precisely. Like, I would love to, you know, I was telling you about how I do like Shanachia in corporate settings and stuff. I'd love to bring it into political settings. Like, I'd love to bring it into a government.
Imagine. And be like, hey, imagine. Guys. I love that.
Because it just humanizes everyone.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I think sometimes we need to come away from all of that and just listen to each other for a sec. Listen to how we've lived our lives. Listen to what's gotten us to think the way we think and live the way we live and walk the way we walk and talk the way we talk. Like, that is the crux of how we operate. And, you know, COVID kind of forced us into being a little bit more introspective and pausing a little bit and thinking about how every other person, you know, does their day to day and lives their life. And, you know, I think that that's kind of allowed Shanachia even be what it is, that people are so much more open to that human element of life. And I think that that is almost, you know, reflecting on how people are so much more open-minded than even they were 5 years ago, and how people are so open to stories being told from people from all walks of life. And that's even reflected in, like, you know, Shanachia, for example, when it started off. Obviously, it started off just as a group of friends, and then now it's kind of grown out into like a public event. The demographic has changed so much. You have so many people from different generations attending Shanachia now. You have people in their 60s and 70s even getting up and speaking at Shanachia, you know, where if the conversations prior to their speech might be very modern and very progressive, and they'll get up and they'll tell their story, and then they'll be like, I'm just amazed by these stories and by how the youth are kind of speaking and what they're talking about. And it's an educational experience as well for everyone, not only for the elderly people that attend Shanachia, but also for us.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's events like Shanachia that really shift things. And again, the humanization aspect, I think, is so important right now, especially. And in terms of diversity with an island, like, I've definitely, you know, my work for so many years has very much been in a queer space, and I've gotten a lot of no's over the years, and I have felt it, but I definitely think that things are shifting and we are moving towards a more progressive, more open-minded kind of space. And if you just look at where Ireland has come from, like, I think we've made huge shifts, which is incredible. It's incredible. And these things do take time, you know, so it is difficult to compare countries and nations, I suppose.
Completely.
So I, seeing as we're recording this for Brian Thomas, I would love to know how important you feel fashion is to people expressing themselves and sharing their story.
Oh, I think it can actually sometimes like be so crucial. Now, it's not essential, but I think it can really help someone express themselves when they're up there. And even myself and a friend of mine were talking about this last night, how like it's quite nerve-wracking even getting dressed for Shanachia, because it's a judgment-free
zone. It's an
event. You obviously want to
look. It's a moment.
Yeah, it's an event, and like it's quite heavily photographed and videographed and stuff. So people obviously do want to present themselves well, but there's a more profound element to this at Shanachia. Like, we had one girl, for example, she told a story, and she'd written it in her journal. So she was reading a story from her journal, and the journal was this beautiful, like, pinks and oranges and yellows. And she basically matched her outfit to those colors. And it was so striking watching someone tell a story and literally bring her story to life, because she had a book in her hand and then she was a personification of that book through the colors she chose. And that really stuck with me. Like, we've had around, I think, let me think, we've had like 30, 40 events. So we've had around 400 or 500 speakers at Talkia. Wow. And that was one of the people I can still remember every single last detail of her outfit. And then in Australia, we had an amazing woman, hilariously actually. So my friend who's from Zimbabwe told a story in the London Chanakia. And then he convinced his aunt to tell a story in the Melbourne Chanakia. And she's also from Zimbabwe. And she was speaking about how when she first moved to Australia, she was quite hesitant to, you know, wear all the colors that she used to wear when she was living in Zimbabwe. But how gradually she kind of just like got more and more into kind of expressing her home country and her nation through her style. And she basically presented her story wearing these amazing colorful earrings, which matched her blazer. And once again, that's just an example of someone like really owning it in their own way, because you own your story just as much as you own your self-expression, whether that is in the form of what you wear or how you wear your hair or what brands you've worn. And even I like find it really important, like, you know, to present myself in a way that's quite striking. And sorry, that's not me being conceited, assuming that I am striking looking, but I try my best. And, you know, like, even one of my friends, for example, has set up an amazing fashion brand. So I wear his clothes as much as his like jerseys as much as I can when I get up there. And another friend of mine has a jewelry brand that I've been able to kind of like show off. And people will come up to me after Shanaki being like, where did you get that? Or where do I find that? And similarly, people will ask about various different, you know, speakers. It's like, what's their Instagram? So I can ask them where they got their sweater, where they got it. So like, once again, like fashion is something that can really connect people. And I think it's something that maybe like the generation above me, particularly like in a male generation above me, were quite afraid of.
Of course.
Because they saw it as something materialistic and they never saw the actual kind of personal, empowering element to fashion, which I think has become so much more widespread now.
Absolutely.
And commonly recognized now.
Yeah. And the creativity as well, you know. I think that fashion gives us the ability to shapeshift and to define our identity in so many different ways. And you know, you can see, like, I know for myself, if I wake up and I'm not feeling it, it's going to be like a t-shirt and joggers kind of day, you know?
Yeah.
But then when I do push myself and I'm like, no, throw something together, you know, it can really change your mood. And it's something that you identify with someone immediately. You see it straight away. You know what kind of person they are based on what they wearing, you know. It's like your first little tip basically on who this person is, and depending on how much you want to push it, you can have so much fun with fashion. You really can. And I love it personally. I love that I can shift, like I was saying, shift between energies, you know, with something that I put on my clothes, something I put on my body. So I would love to know, is fashion important to you? I keep saying,
I would love to tell you.
I would love to know, is fashion important to you as a founder of a brand? Do you think much about how you dress yourself and how that impacts the brand?
Big time. Yes, I do. I like for the events. No, generally, no, I would happily.
It's something you're conscious of now.
On a Monday morning, but it's something I'm conscious of at when I'm hosting an event. You know, I try to change things up every time and wear something that just kind of is approachable but also striking. You know, and I would actually. It's probably the only time of the week that I think a lot about what I need to put on, and I got quite stressed about it in a good way. Like, I get like healthily stressed about what to wear, and then I'd have these weird moments where I'd end up wearing two different pairs of shoes.
Yeah,
two different shoes to be like different.
What?
But like, yeah, I don't know. Don't even ask what 15-year-old Kieran Gaffney was doing.
I love that.
But I've learned how to make fashion something that's quite therapeutic and quite you know, good for me. And I'm in a very privileged position to be able to do that.
Yeah.
But I think as a host of an event, it's important to
of course.
Not only look good, but also feel good, you know?
Yeah. I very much related to what you said about sort of like fitting the mold. Like I spend so much time trying to look masculine, to like look straight, not too gay, nothing too tight, nothing too flamboyant. But now I want to be as gay as possible. I'm like, do you know, I remembered something recently which popped into my head and I couldn't believe it. I actually remember telling people when I was younger that being gay is just such a small part of me and there's like so much more to me, and which is true to a degree. But now I'm like, I want to be as gay as possible. I want to be the most gay because it's such a privilege to be me, you know, authentically be me. So I would love to know, talking about your fashion, talking about your looks, the looks you bring, what would be a favorite look?
Ooh, I love getting my jumpsuit out. I really, really love getting the jumpsuit on. It's a boy suit, yeah. And I just feel like a bit of a slinky because like I'm 6'4" and I just feel like nice and tall. And like,
what color is it?
It's black, which is funny because they actually say that you shouldn't wear black when on a stage because you often get drowned out.
But you disappear. You just become a black hole.
Yeah, but I do love wearing it. And
I think I've seen you in it, actually. I think I know which one you're talking about.
I tend to wear it a lot at festivals and stuff, but it's nice because it's light and it's long and there's loads of pockets.
And one item, just throw it on.
Yeah, exactly. It's easy. It's a simple one-size-fits-all solution.
It's like the eternal pursuit of finding something that is fashionable but also comfortable, because it's actually really difficult for man.
It is. It really is.
And you mentioned on your Instagram, for some people, storytelling at Shanaki is their first time ever speaking in front of a crowd or a new way for them to be creative. Can you tell us about some of the ways people have told their stories at your events that's maybe not just standing and telling a story?
Yeah, I can. So there's been a good bit of crowd interaction where like the speaker might do something quite engaging with the audience. Like let's say there's a lyrics to a song, they'll start humming it and then everyone will start singing it. Or there's an example of someone who was in a very controlling relationship, and this is quite heavy, but she asked everyone to open their phones, unlock their phones, open their WhatsApp messages and pass their phones to the person sitting next to them, even if they're a total stranger. And she was like, that's what my partner made me do every single day for 6 months.
Wow.
And her story was all about her controlling relationship that she was in. We've had people, you know, get someone in the audience to come up and be like their, you know, maybe like, I don't know, do something interactive. It's very rare that they do that because we kind of like our audiences to be as comfortable as possible. But also someone who actually recently came to Shanaki commented on was how it can be really nice the way people will come to an event with a story and also with a poem. That's really cool because, you know, like poetry nights often people will just come and they'll just say their poetry and they won't really contextualize it. But this year you'll have someone actually tell a 5-minute anecdote about why they wrote this poem or about why they like this poem that's been written by someone else, and then they'll tell it. And that makes poetry so accessible for the people that are listening to it. So there are a couple of examples of ways people have been creative at Shanakia. Very rarely people use props, but they can if they want, or visual aids. And yeah, all in all, it's just like a really lovely kind of, the creative juices are just flowing. And then you'll have, my favorite is when people decide to get up and speak on the night, because we normally have like 12 or 13 people already signed up to speak, and like I'll have done like a little workshop with them or like done one-to-ones with them, or we have at least a WhatsApp group every event just to kind of go through any bits and bobs. But then you'll have like the occasional person who's just in the audience who's inspired and is like, I really want to get up and tell a story.
Yeah.
And what's also, sorry, I'm literally rambling out, but what I love is when someone towards the end of the night is able to almost like connect all the previous speakers' stories to their own story, and they kind of like cascade through the story. They'd be like, oh yeah, I'm just like Kyle because I've experienced this, and through like what Laura was saying, I've done that. Like that's so magical because it just shows that they've been actively listening and relating and empathizing, and that's special.
It's just, I think it's really, it just boils down to the fact that the human existence is so universal, you know, and we can all relate to each other in some way. Having a super year of events, you've been a busy bee, Are there any events this coming year that you are excited about?
Yeah, well, I'm buzzing for Pride, obviously, on Thursday, which is amazing. But as well as that, we're doing a Shanakiha at Other Side Festival. We're also doing one at All Together Now Festival, and we're doing one at Another Love Story as well, which is going to be just really interesting. We already did Body and Soul this weekend, and that was really cool to see it in a daytime setting and also at a festival. And then also really excited to announce that in end of July and then also beginning of August onwards, we're going to be doing a partnership with a big alcohol brand. I'm not allowed to say who yet, but we'll be touring the west of Ireland with them, which is really exciting, because the west of Ireland is really where that Shanachie kind of like originally is associated with. And it's going to be really cool to kind of bring Shanachie out to more rural environments. And then next year, I'm going to take it to Canada, take it to America, take it to Hong Kong, take it back to Oz, potentially take it to South Africa as well, actually. So if you know anyone down there that's good for spinning yarn, please put them in contact. So yeah, like I think, you know, when thinking about like almost every Shanachie, I get really excited for. So like we're obviously globalizing and we're going to be going all across the world and we're doing these festivals and these partnerships. But like, honestly, every Thursday or Friday night, whether that's in the Fumbly or in Ridley Road in London or in Murmur in Amsterdam or elsewhere, it feels like I'm anticipating my wedding day. Because it's just like 150 people, some friends, some people I don't know, coming around, just like listening to stories, like the way you'd have wedding speeches, happy, sad, everything, anything. It just is a very, very, very exciting thing to look forward to. And that's why I'm envious of anyone who's experienced it for the first time this week, or who will be experiencing it for the first time this week, because it is just quite an overwhelmingly positive experience, I like to think, at least, and I hope other people think so too. And one thing I'm also really excited about, and I didn't get to mention that already, is that like we're going to be like we're already in the process of hiring people to host the nights, and each, you know, MC or host will take a little bit of a different angle to how to host Shanachie vis-a-vis the way I host it. We even had like two of my friends host the night in London when I was on the way to Australia. And now we're going to be doing them in Australia every 6 weeks, where we'll have other people host those nights who've spoken at previous nights back home or in Australia when we went down there last month. So, you know, seeing it be kind of taken down different directions by different MCs is going to be really beautiful to see over the next 12 months. And very excited to see that happened too.
It is very exciting, and you should just be so proud of yourself, Kieran. Honestly, the growth has been incredible, and it's so nice to see someone's dreams or passion come to life. Not a lot of people get to do what they love, get to do what they're passionate about. I feel exactly the same way. Every single shoot feels like my first shoot, and I get equal amounts of nerves and excitement, and every single time. And it's just such a blessing to be able to do what you love, and you have 100% found something that you love. You found your baby, and it's just gonna, like, the proof is in the pudding. The fact that there's such a global response to it, as well as it just being such an incredible concept, like, you know, you should be really proud of yourself.
Thank you, Kyle. Yeah, I know. It's
I hope your parents are proud of
they
you.
They are. They're happy. Dad's even gotten up and told the story, which is hilarious.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that, Kyle. That's really nice of you to say.
So just my last question. How will you be celebrating Pride this year?
So this is like a confession, but I don't actually know if I have the energy to go out and Pride this year. No, I think I'm going to be like definitely going to go to the parade. I have some friends coming over and we're going to have some drinks, and just like, I kind of want to take it as easy as I can, just because it's been such a busy month, and you can hear I sound quite raspy. But I mean, it's Pride at the end of the day, so I probably will go for the
street. We have to. Yeah. I absolutely want to get outside and into the streets. I hope it's good weather.
Apparently it is.
I didn't actually do anything for Pride last year, and then it was the pandemic before that. So I'm like, I have to. It is my gay right. I absolutely have to get out. And I just want to be on the streets. Yeah. I want to be around people. And yeah, it's our one day that we get to be gay to the max and just celebrate us, you know? Let's do that.
You might be right.
You have to.
I will. Okay, I've changed my mind. I'll see you on the streets.
Okay.
I'll be at the night for sure. But I might just do it during the day instead of going to a party in the night.
Yeah. No, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. And you know what? It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Likewise.
Thanks so much for listening, guys. That was a wonderful chat. And I hope that everybody has an incredible Pride. If you would like to find out more on what Brown Thomas is doing for Pride, keep an eye on their socials. And if you would like to find out more about Shanna Kiha and follow Kieran, you can find them at...
You can find us at SEANCHOICHE, which is our Instagram handle, and our TikTok handle as well. As I said already, it's not spelled the way it's pronounced, but you should be able to find us there.